He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitzjulian, Council Executive Producer. Windy City interning, are listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN. 102.5 The Game. In about 30 minutes, Greg Bishop is going to join us. And Greg Bishop wrote a heck of an article. And I cannot praise the article enough because you're going to see a lot of headlines. You're going to see these little tiny moments from the article that are taken. And you're going to make some sort of grandiose statement based on it. The article is about Vince Young, and he sat down not only with family and friends of Vince Young, but Vince himself, and really took a look at Vince today. And this is sort of Vince today, where he sits today, how he looks back on his life and career, how he looks forward. It's really sort of trying to get you a sense of where Vince is in his head and where he is in his life and who he is as a person today. It is really well written. You need to read the entire article. We'll tweet out the link to it.
Those are fantastically worded questions, because I read like 4,000 words on Vince Young, and I still don't know the answer to any of those questions. What is Vince Young in his head? Who is Vince Young? What is he today? Where is he today? Why did things happen to him? The range of emotions that you get as a sports fan, as a Nashvillian, as a human being, like it is a bizarre range of emotions. Everything from like simultaneous like compassion and what the hell are you doing, like all at the same time. And my first memory, and I want to make sure I preface my conversation about Vince Young with my personal feelings, because my personal feelings are my first ever college football season that I was working in this industry was 2005, and the first ever championship game I ever covered professionally was the greatest game ever played. And Vince Young is probably, if I had to start a team with anybody that I've ever covered, and that would include Adrian Peterson, that would include Tim Tebow, that would include Deshaun Watson, and a lot of other unbelievably spectacular college football players, I think the very first player I would start my college football team with would be Vince Young. I think he was the single most unstoppable force on a college football field when he was at his best. I've never seen anybody like him. So I want to start with that. That's my first emotion when I think about Vince Young, is that, like, this spectacular athlete who did spectacular things for the University of Texas. And then you read about how we've seen the self-destructive patterns. We've read about all the stories over the last 10 years. We've seen them all. So you have all of those emotions. And then even it sounds like, if you read the article, even within himself, Fitzy, there's this back and forth internally with himself that he doesn't really know what he is. And it's, hey, I recognize my problems, but then I'm going to blame them on other people. Hey, I'm not going to talk trash about this guy. The quote is, I'm not going to get into this. And then he immediately gets into it. So, like, he's a fascinating individual, whatever you think of him, that's for sure.
I think we, you know, and in fairness, to lay out all pretenses in this conversation, I didn't grow up a Titans fan. You guys know that. And so for me, watching Vince Young was just watching a team. You know, I don't root against the Titans.
Just another football player.
But it's just a football player on a football team. So I have absolutely no dog in the Jeff Fisher Vince Young fight. So I have to stress that, because I think what's happening in this article already, from anybody that's reading it, is whatever side of Vince Young they want to take, they're using bits and pieces and not the entire context to support that side of Vince Young. And I think what you just said is really accurate. When I read it, it was almost like Serial. The podcast Serial, where she was trying.
Maybe
to find
the only
out.
Human being that's never listened to 1 minute of Serial.
Well, Serial was a massive podcast where the host was trying to figure out if someone in jail was rightly or wrongly convicted.
It's like the podcast version of Making a Murderer, right?
It was first, yeah. Right. So, but what's amazing about it is I listened to that entire thing on the way down to the Senior Bowl a few years ago. Listened to it just all the way. I just got in the car, listened to the podcast series. And at the end of each episode, I'd be like, oh, he's guilty. Nah, next episode, I'd be like, nah, he's not guilty at all. And I went back and forth. And she did, as a host, she went back and forth saying, I can't figure it out. Right. I thought a week ago. And I got sort of a little bit of the same sense in reading the article, that I got the sense that I'm looking at it saying, man, is he changed? Is he the same? Has he grown up? Is he still a petulant child? And I felt like Greg Bishop, in writing the article, was sort of asking the same questions, because you could get a sense of one comment would lead you one way and the next comment would lead you the other.
And he set it up that way, which is what makes it brilliant writing, is he literally even within the article, one sentence says one thing, and then the very next sentence goes, but Vince Young can't help himself. And then Vince Young goes into ripping Jeff Fisher or ripping Ryan Fitzpatrick or ripping the Titans or ripping whatever. And even though he just got done saying to Greg Bishop, I don't want to get into this. Like he's conflicted. And not to go too deep into this as far as like the psychology of human beings or whatever, but part of the reason I think The Wire is the greatest television show ever made is that it makes the bad guys, it shows you the good side of the bad guys and it shows you the bad side of the good guys, right? Like Jimmy McNulty, the cop, the bunk, the cops, they have massive problems and negative things. And all the bad guys, it humanizes the corner street drug dealer kid. You know what I mean? Like it humanizes them and shows why they end up, even though there's a lot of good inside of them. So this to me is very similar. It's presenting both sides of the human. It's the yin and the yang, whatever you want to get into about the human side, where there's the good and the bad in everybody, right? Like,
right.
This is what Vince Young is. He is this very complex thing. Now, I see the petulant child a lot in this article.
Me too.
But I see a desire for that for Vince Young to get rid of that. But he lacks the ability to do it. Like I feel like he sees himself that way and sees himself as growing up and moving beyond it, but then can't act that way, can't move beyond. Like, it's fascinating. It's really well done and really well written. And Vince Young is like a Shakespearean character. Like, he is a tragic figure that you want to root for, because like I said, my first interaction with Vince Young was this spectacular athlete that did things that made everyone in the country just go, oh my God. And then you have all of these stories, the Patron shots at the TGI Fridays and the Cheesecake Factory and the going bankrupt and, you know, all these things. And now he's like cussing out quarterbacks because he's jealous of their money.
Well, and
it's really hard to get your head around it.
One of the things I think Greg did a nice job in writing was sort of an analysis of points. But I will say this, in the article, Vince Young lists some specific things that he has, specific problems he has with Jeff Fisher. And to Greg's credit, the way my mind was, as I was reading it, I was ready to just blow up as I'm reading him say, well, you know, the plane didn't wait for me when I was 2 minutes late and they'd waited for other players. I'm reading this and I'm ready to blow up. But then
which side?
Against Vince. And I'll get into that in a second. But then I read Greg's response and you know, a few inches down in the column, there's Greg saying, now, in fairness, and he breaks down the opposite side of it. I thought that what made the article brilliantly written. I will say specifically about the plane, I'll always go back to one of my first tour managers I ever had, and he said this about the bus call. Every bus has a call time, and it's usually at like a Kroger parking lot somewhere, and you park your car, and everybody hops on the bus, and that's sort of the way the tour bus world works. One of the first tour managers...
Kroger managers everywhere are now on high alert for tour buses.
Oh, no, they love it because you go in and, like, even though you're parked there for a week, the tour bus stocks itself and all 12 guys that are getting on the bus. So
that's very interesting.
Yeah, so that's why, like, if you go out to the Hermitage Kroger, and you're like, why are all these people parked way far away from the door all the time? Those are musicians. So, but it's funny because the first tour manager I had said if it was a plane, it would have left you. And that was his thing. If you were a minute late to bus call, gone. Well, and on that end, there were times that he would wait for certain guys. And, that's his discretion.
Well, and that's what's weird is normally the star quarterback would be the guy you'd wait on. But what's interesting is, like, this again shows another interesting character in this whole saga, which is Jeff Fisher, who obviously has a very sort of yin and yang story with this city. The unbelievably great run and the unbelievable success and getting to a Super Bowl and all the wins that Jeff Fisher produced for this city, so quickly forgotten by some bad moves and acting kind of like a jerk to people. But guess what? To your point about, like, we were talking about Whiplash, the movie yesterday, and how you were treated as a violinist growing up. Like, we can all sit there and say that Jeff Fisher was kind of a jerk in that situation, but if the rules are the rules, you kind of need to know if you know the rules going in. You can be like, yeah, my boss is a jerk, but then you need to follow the rules. Like, I'm not saying Jeff Fisher wasn't a jerk in that situation, but if Vince Young knew the rules and didn't follow the rules, that's on you. So there is some element of back and forth with that. But, you know, there's one where he talks about they talk about the draft. There's one passage in there where they talk about the draft picking Vince Young. We all know this is a Bud Adams selection. That no one in the Titans facility, other than the owner, had Vince Young higher than third on the board.
Which
was
shocking.
With Matt Leinart and Jay Cutler. But that's not just a Jeff Fisher thing. That was everybody. That's the scouting department. That's Norm Chow, the offensive coordinator. That's everybody saying, yeah, we had Cutler and Leinart ahead of Vince Young. But Bud Adams took Vince Young. Now, half of those names would be right. Jay Cutler was a better product and a better player in the NFL than Vince Young. Half of them would be wrong because Matt Leinart was awful and very much worse than Vince Young.
Right.
So I just think, to me, that the tragedy is that Vince Young had what was given a lottery ticket by God to be this special, special thing and chose not to capitalize on it in the moment. Whether that was immaturity or entitlement or, you know, not having to work hard his whole life because he was just better than everybody else. Again, I've been on football fields and basketball fields with some of the greatest athletes I've ever seen. I watched Derrick Henry run through Ohio State's defense in the Sugar Bowl unbelievably. I've seen a lot of great – Vince Young, I played basketball with Vince Young one time, and it was he is by far the greatest athlete I've ever been around. And he just didn't work hard to maximize that potential.
Well, through the process of the article, we learned a lot. I want to get into a couple other things that the article said before we get to Greg Bishop. And, hey, Floyd, you know, we know Floyd Reese. You should always check out Floyd. Jared and the GM, fantastic show on these very airwaves from 2 to 6 every day. But, Floyd, we know usually when you're out walking around, you're out walking around.
Does he walk in a mall or does he walk in
the
neighborhood?
I think it's speed walking through the neighborhood, and it's like the hips are going and everything. So, Floyd, if the hips are going right now and you're listening, you want to confirm this whole third guy on your list. I'd be interested to know the accuracy of that because as
615-737-1025.
As this continues to grow, this article continues to grow, more people are stepping out and speaking out on it. We'll continue to break down some of the things that Vince said, including some real headline grabbers, let's say that, about some current quarterbacks in the NFL. We'll talk about that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Want to go to the ESPYs, you know, like fly to L.A., walk the red carpet, go to the big party. How about going as the guest of Peyton Manning, this year's host? Make a donation to the V Foundation for Cancer Research of as little as $20. You can win an incredible ESPYs trip and the chance to meet Peyton at a rehearsal before the show. Go to ebay.com/ESPN to donate for your chance to win. That's ebay.com/ESPN. No purchase necessary. Sweepstake ends Thursday, June 29th. Go to ebay.com/ESPN. Do it. Do it now. So we're talking about the Vince Young article that's all over the interwebs at this point and all over conversation. As Greg Bishop from SportsIllustrated.com wrote a really fantastic piece showing sort of both sides of this equation. And the funny thing is that the piece of it that many people have already taken and made into a headline is the fact that Vince Young essentially questioned why he's at home making dinner while Ryan Fitzpatrick is out on the field still getting paid.
And Blaine Gabbert.
And Blaine Gabbert.
Now, let's be honest. If Blaine Gabbert was out on the field getting paid, I would be upset too. Now, to your point, I'm scrolling through an article on the Tennessean, and I'm not trying to pick on the Tennessean here, but I'm just pointing this out. The very first link on the bottom, or the second link on the bottom, is former Titans quarterback Vince Young rips Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jeff Fisher. That's the headline. And that's what gets clicks. So, I mean, I get that. But I think it falls on the fans and the readers to make sure you go read the entire article to get the whole perspective, because it's so well done that I think it's worth your time. But it does really paint Vince Young in this. And for me, again, like I said, I had 37 different emotions reading the article. Ripping on Ryan Fitzpatrick is one thing. That reeks of like, he's like, basically he's still bleeping getting paid, right? I mean, that's basically his quote about Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he's right. Leading the league in interceptions. Well, technically he was third in interceptions last year. Not the point, but It's this jealous sort of, you said petulant child this morning when I first came in, so I don't want to steal your commentary, but that was your phrase, and I agree with you on it. I think it's the right way to explain it. While he does come across as self-aware and mature, and I need to change this, and I need to fix this, and this is my problem, and this is this, which is all a way to create a level of compassion for him. But at the same time, he turns around and says something like, why is Ryan Fitzpatrick? Well, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is better than you, Vince, and because Ryan Fitzpatrick works harder than you, and he's better at playing football than you. That's it. If you were better, then you'd be in there playing football for whatever team Ryan Fitzpatrick plays for.
So the more we talk about
it. Tampa Bay.
Okay.
The more we talk about it, the more I've decided, in my mind, he comes off as well-coached. And what I mean by that is he's saying all the right things at different times in this interview. Like, they've sat down with him. They've media coached him. He knows the right things to say. He says them, But then when he makes little comments off the cuff, you're like,
then Vince Young comes
then
back.
Then the real Vince Young comes right. back. Because there's a point where I have no problem with you with him if he had phrased that same quote essentially saying, I'm here making dinner and Ryan Fitzpatrick's making money. To me, it reeks of my lost opportunity. Like, I lost the chance to do that.
Right.
That's not the context that it had on there. The context that it was coming through in the article was much more of, I can't believe that jerk, you know. Yeah. That,
it was jealousy.
Yeah, that idiot gets
resentment.
To play. And tell me that Colin Kaepernick has that quote all day. Deserve it. You know, if you're Colin Kaepernick and you're sitting here and you're saying.
Well, there's an argument. I mean, you could have that discussion. I mean,
But if you're Colin Kaepernick and you're currently on the outside looking in the league and you're looking around and you want to make a statement about, hey, here are my stats, and I've worked hard, and, you know, I can't believe other guys get an opportunity. I would understand that sentiment in that time, but if you're coming in on a where are they now as a 34, 35-year-old right. quarterback that's, you know,
with a torn hamstring on a Canadian football team.
Right, and you're coming in and you're basically saying these guys stink and they get opportunity and that's not fair. I mean, that's hard for me to swallow.
And certainly there was obviously, and I don't know if it got all the way to addiction, and frankly, I really hate getting into people's personal struggles in these situations because sometimes it just crosses into a place where it's none of our business, I feel like. But the tragic figure and the compassion and the human element is all very much there. But what I never really like about that part of these types of stories, and I always go to the Josh Hamilton angle, the baseball player who went through major addiction problems, we give him a lot of credit for overcoming those issues, and deservedly so. Someone who overcomes those issues deserves credit, and we should root for them to get healthy and be better. But sometimes I feel like then you don't give credit to all the other people who never had the problem in the first place. Like you don't get credit in life for not becoming a heroin addict, right?
Right.
Like, you don't walk down the street and be like, good job, you didn't become a heroin addict. Like, that's not how it works. So that's why I think it's hard to find compassion in some of these moments for Vince, is that you brought it all on yourself, sort of. Not everything, but most of it was brought on yourself. Even in the story, talks about, with quote, I think it was Norm Chow that was talking about, he didn't come in and study film. He didn't come in and work hard to learn from other quarterbacks. He didn't want to put in the extra time to be a great leader or teammate or all these things. Like, he wasn't a bad guy, but he didn't do anything to help himself, and that's sort of what makes him a tragic figure.
Well, and you mentioned some of that, and there have been multiple reports in the last 24 hours from people around the Titans and writers that cover the Titans essentially saying, hey, it wasn't like he was late to the flight once, and in fact, after he was late,
right,
he missed several more flights. So, you know, there's a little bit of a message of context that about that whole era that seems to be a little forgotten in this process. And he wants to pinpoint these particular moments where things came off the rails. But the other side of it is, he had the opportunity at a career other places. He had the opportunity right. to go in Philadelphia and make a career for himself. He had the opportunity, heck, even with the Browns as his last stop. Like, he had the opportunity to prove himself, and he never got it done.
And the bottom, and that's what's weird about this, is you can say he had a quirky delivery and that his arm was this or was that or, you know, whatever. But you will never convince me that if he trained as hard as Tom Brady trains now, or let's say he has Tom Brady's health now with, like, James Harrison's training ability. Like, take the guy who just is the consummate professional, right? First guy in, last guy out, studies film, works hard, takes care of his body. You will not convince me that he's not capable. In his prime, at 27, 28, 29, 30 years old, a couple of years ago, not today, but you would not be able to convince me that he wouldn't be capable of being an NFL quarterback. Maybe not a high-level NFL quarterback, but he was too gifted. He was too talented. I've never seen anybody with that much talent from an athletic standpoint, and that includes the arm talent, as scouts like to call it now. I mean, he had a strong arm, very efficient passer in college, but it starts with college. And there's another conversation we can have off of this that spins off into a bigger conversation, which is, do we, you know, at 16 and 17 years old, when he was a prospect in Texas, he was treated like a god. He was treated like a king. He got to Texas, he was treated like a god and treated like a king. And that is what led to the coddled, entitled, not working hard thing. And there's a conversation there to be had about that
angle.
And
he was drafted by an owner that also coddled him and was also a fan of him. I mean, that there's a lot of blame to go around in this. It just feels like the article doesn't necessarily – it doesn't feel like Vince takes enough of his own blame. in the process.
I agree with that.
Greg Bishop wrote it, and we're going to hear from Greg Bishop. We'll do that up next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. We've been breaking down the Vince Young article all morning. Again, I cannot stress this enough. Don't read a headline. Read the article because the article does a great job of bouncing back and forth and giving you both sides. And it took both of us on sort of a turn of emotion to say it as simply as possible. 1 second you feel like you understand him, the next second you don't. And
talking about Vince Young, right.
So it feels like the writer of the article also echoed some of those sentiments, and now we get to talk to him, so we'll know directly. Greg Bishop, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. First and foremost, Greg, great job on the article.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you saying that. I particularly agree with the last part. You know, I've been inundated the last couple of days here with what he said about Fitzpatrick and some of the more headline-grabbing things that Vince said to me over the course of our time together. But I agree with both of you that I think it's a lot more nuanced than that. I appreciate you saying that.
No, I think it's a tragic Shakespearean-style character, and we obviously are very close to it here in Nashville. But my first question is sort of, tell everybody how this came about, why this was interesting to you, and how this whole ball got rolling, and how you ended up with such a long piece of sort of investigative journalism on a character level.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I've known Lee Steinberg for a long time. He was Vince's agent as of about February. I talked in the piece a little bit about how they met at the Super Bowl and had this four-hour meeting where they're both going over all the missteps of their life and really, you know, bearing their souls to each other. So initially, Lee Steinberg had reached out to me. I was obviously pretty interested in Vince as a character. And from there, it was just a matter of, getting him to kind of understand my process. I write maybe 15 to 20 stories a year. They're mostly longer pieces like this for the magazine. And, you know, a big part of that is getting the guy up front to understand that he's going to have to spend some time with you, that there are going to be a lot of questions asked, that I'm going to want to talk to his mom and Bo and his brothers and his sisters. And so that I've kind of unfolded that way. Initially Vince was a little bit hesitant, but he started coming around. He sent me a ton of numbers. He was really open with his life, and he told his friends and family to be too. And he said the whole time that what he really wanted was for the real story to come out, whatever that may be. And I'm not sure what he thought of the piece yesterday. We haven't spoken other than a few text messages, so I'm not really sure how he thought that came out. But I feel like this is the real piece, the good, the bad, all of it wrapped into one place.
We're talking to Sports Illustrated's Greg Bishop. Again, fantastic article on Vince Young. So let me get into this a little bit, because obviously something was failed from the moment he got to the Titans. So his relationship with Jeff Fisher being what you explored a little bit there, do you think that was just simply a fact where Jeff didn't want him as the quarterback and was forced to take him by Bud Adams? Is that relationship different if Jeff had him at the top of his quarterback list?
I do think it would have been different. I think a lot of people close to Vince thought that, you know, that was sort of the turning point in his career. The moment everything went wrong is when he was drafted to a Titans team that didn't really want him. The coaching staff preferred Matt Leinart. They preferred Jay Cutler. And they end up getting Vince because the owner says that they have to draft him. And so, I don't think it was all a matter of Fisher not wanting Vince to be his quarterback. I think part of it, you know, Norm Chow talks in the story about how Vince was immature, about how he'd show up to meetings and he'd not be in a good mood. I think that if you don't want a guy and then he shows up and he's not doing what you want him to do, he doesn't have the attitude you want him to have, and even though you're winning games together, you're sort of bothered by, you know, sort of the actions as well. So I think all those things kind of twin together to make it so that the relationship, which started off on the wrong note, continued to deteriorate. And then, it becomes just something that, once you throw in these things that Vince talked about in the story, the suicide incident, the walking off the field, it becomes something at that point that's just untenable. And so, you know, you can kind of see the step-by-step breakdown there. But I do think it was unique in pro sports, in that you have this, you know, this coach that was widely respected at that time and this quarterback who was coming off the best game in college football history. And over the course of a few seasons, their relationship spectacularly unraveled.
I think one of the most fascinating parts of this is the internal dialogue within Vince Young himself. And obviously we can just judge by what we read and what we hear and what you've given us, but you were there and you've talked with him. Is this maturation process still an ongoing thing, Or is this sort of, I'm going to be accountable and then blame everybody else? Is that just something he's never going to grow out of? How does that internal conflict get resolved for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to me, that was really the hardest part of writing the story, because I felt that from him. You know, I think he knew what he was supposed to say to me. I knew what he wanted to convey. And that was that he'd moved on and he had forgiven Fisher, and he had this sort of new life that was all, you know, moving in the right direction. And well, a lot of that is true. You could tell when you pressed him, especially when we talked about what happened in Tennessee, or when we talked about what happened with his finances. You could tell that the more you spoke to him, that he still had some lingering bitterness, and he felt like people in his life had really done him wrong. In a lot of ways, he was correct there. You know, his uncle, his financial advisor, his coaches, they did do him wrong, and he also did himself wrong. And so what I've sort of felt the more time I spent around him was that he was taking responsibility and he was assigning blame. And the whole reason that he went to Canada, that he wanted to play football again, was to try to kind of like close the gap, to try to make it so he could kind of understand what happened to him better. And I think part of putting his life in order was that as well, just being able to kind of sort through, like, at the ultimate end of the day, like, these things are things he personally could have avoided, and how much responsibility should he take for that, and how much should he assign elsewhere. And so I don't know ultimately when he'll reach a point when he feels comfortable, you know, with what happened, but I did get the sense, like, over and over again, that he was trying to work through it, and that may be a lifelong process here for him.
Greg, I want to kind of dive into that a little bit, because as much as we look at the Tennessee era, he, like every player in the NFL, had opportunities to sort of refresh and restart. Why was he not able, in your mind, to maximize any of the opportunities that came to him after he left Nashville?
You know, I think he was just he would say, I think, a big part of what he thinks he didn't make it on the Browns or with the Bills or with the Packers is that he had this financial cloud kind of following him by then. You know, at that point, he was being sued. He had declared bankruptcy ultimately, and they were coming after many things, including his, you know, trophies, cars, house, et cetera. And so he had this moment with Ted Thompson that's in the story where the Packers general manager went to him and said, essentially, that, you know, he needed to clean all that stuff up if he wanted to play football. And for Vince to kind of crystallize then that he felt like Thompson was saying he needed to get his finances in order. He needed to be on a team that wasn't being harassed by his creditors in order to even have a chance to make a team. So, you know, I think that's probably a simplistic viewpoint. It probably had as much to do with you know, his skills at that point, but he never really had a long look in any of those places, and he thinks the reason he didn't have a long look is because of his financial situation. So that would be sort of his reasoning behind it. And the scouts and GMs that I talked to, they basically, you know, said that there was a headache there and that it did impact him, but that a lot of them wanted to fix his motion or correct the hitch, and they just weren't able to.
Greg, obviously prognosticating about someone's mental state and growth and maturation process is dangerous, but 25 years from now, when this all is said, it sounds like there are a lot of positives about how Vince Young has developed and grown up and matured. Do you think that continues and the end of this story, the last chapter, is a positive one in 15 or 20 years?
I do. You know, I think what I would look at there is the amount of growth that Vince has made in the last 3 years alone. You know, in those 3 years, he cleared up his financial debts. He started a partner in 3 different businesses. He's got a few different jobs, including one in Texas, one broadcasting. You know, he went back and got his degree. I just think that you've seen the level of growth there and the level of work involved. And, well, I don't think he's as over what happened to him as he thinks he is or as he wants to be. I do think that he's moved in a very positive direction in the last 3 years. And I do think that, you know, that will continue. So I don't know if it'll be a great football ending. You know, I end the story with him saying he's not closing the door and trying to come back. But obviously that's a long shot, I think, at best. And so I think that the key for him and for most people as you get older is just working through, you know, everything that happened to you and trying to figure out how you kind of move forward from there. So in that regard, I think that Vince has done a lot of good work already. And I think that we'll continue to see that as he gets older.
Greg, I know we want to ask you about this year's Titans team. We'll do that in a second. There's one other thing I have to ask you about, in the article that really sort of stood out to me. Sort of out of left field, I thought he made an interesting comparison that Tiger Woods would be the only person that really understands his life struggles. Did that surprise you? Did you get context on that to sort of make that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it definitely surprised me. It was something that I kind of had on my list to ask him, because when I went up there, that was the day that the arrest had happened, and nobody really knew what had happened with Tiger yet, but everybody was talking about it. And it reminded me of a piece I had read when I was researching Vince that had kind of compared his career to Tiger and how they'd kind of blown up at the same time, and they'd had some troubles at the same time, and now they were both, trying to make it in the sport that had made them famous. And so I thought it was interesting that he brought it up himself. And I thought it was really interesting that he really kind of blamed the media for Tiger's troubles rather than Tiger himself. And I think part of that is just him sympathizing with what it's like to be caught in sort of that tsunami of fame, that the TMZ news cycle. And he just kind of went really into depth on how watching Tiger suffer, watching people make fun of him, watching people lay out how many Uber rides he could have taken if he didn't drive that night, that it reminded him of what happened when he got a DWI, and it reminded him of what happened when he got in trouble in Tennessee. It just, to me, was a really interesting comparison, because I did kind of see some of the parallels there, and I did understand what he was saying. And, for him to come out and say that right away, I think was pretty eye-opening and illuminating that's who ultimately Vince chose to identify with.
So, Greg, we'll go from the Titans of old to the Titans anew, because you wrote a great little guest spot on Monday Morning Quarterback that had some positive things to say about this year's Titans. Where are you on them, and what do you sort of see as the ceiling?
I like this team a lot, and in fact, I think they're a playoff team this year. I think they reconfigured an offense in a way that makes them dangerous. I think a lot of my belief in the Titans stems from my belief in Marcus Mariota. I did a piece on him right when he won the Heisman. I just found him to be a pretty interesting guy with a lot of character, I think, at the quarterback position. So then you throw in Eric Decker, you throw in Corey Davis, you throw in, the targets they already had, like Delonte Walker. And I think that team competes in their division, and I like them in the playoffs and maybe even with a win or two. I think they're really moving in the right direction.
Can you make any comparison today with Marcus Mariota? I think we kind of look at this sometimes. We always want to look back and look forward. And since you just did the article on Vince, and you're talking about sort of this year's Titans, can you make any comparison just on the field and what they're capable of and how special they can be as quarterbacks between the two quarterbacks?
Yeah, Mariota is a tough one. With I like the way he throws a lot. I guess his actual ball reminds me a little bit of like a Steve McMahon. I think he's got great presence on the field. Similar to what we talk about the greater quarterbacks in the league. Guys like Rodgers and Tom Brady. And then I think what he really needed most was just a lot of options, and now he's got that. So I would say that I like them offensively as a team that potentially could be one of the best in the league in a year or two, and I think they'll compete right away this year.
It's fantastic stuff, man. I can't say enough good things about the article. We loved it. We'll keep telling everybody to read it. Go out and follow him on Twitter, at Greg Bishop, SI. Greg, thanks for your time this morning.
Great work, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, read the whole article, but we'll continue the conversation, because I think people need to understand that the era we're in now is not the era that Vince Young was in.
Already having questions on Twitter from
the Titans are a much different team. We'll break that down. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Don't forget, for all the latest news coverage, everything sports in Tennessee, like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twits and the Instas. Twitter, 102.5 The Game. Insta, at The Game Nashville.
As long as you don't say Insty.
Yeah, well, I went with Twits this time.
Is fine. Tweeter. I like the Tweeter.
Download our app, The Game Nashville, to listen to Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 The Game. You can also get back to previous segments we've done. So be sure to get out there if you missed any of that fantastic interview with Greg.
I was going to say, which, by the way, today has been spectacular. I mean, it's been an amazing show.
Yeah, Cole Kubelik killed it in the first hour.
It's awesome.
If you missed that, go back and listen to Cole and Greg Bishop here. And shout out to executive producer Julian Council, by the way.
Showtime's Julian Council.
Showtime's Julian Council has done a fantastic job of...
Is Tweeter the character from Varsity Blues, the wide receiver?
Yes, he was.
Thank you. All right. I'm glad I remember.
R.I.P. Billy
Bob. Remember about that
movie?
Almost
been a year since he passed.
Like the actual actor?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that.
Man, he was a 10.
So we got to be clear about this because everybody comes in with a preconceived notion. That's why you and I both broke down the fact that I think if you had any preconception on Vince Young, it was a positive one coming into the league because you saw him in college and you fell in love with how dynamic and athletic he is. So
still a lot of questions about all the same questions that we ask about all spread quarterbacks.
Sure, sure.
Going through the progressions.
But you walked into his pro career sort of looking at it saying, this could be really awesome, right? I mean, there's a fair point. You didn't.
I mean, he wasn't a clear-cut number one guy, though.
Well, but the greater point coming, you didn't come in with any negative preconceptions on him as a person.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I don't think so. There was not a, like, oh, he's a bad worker or,
right.
You know, any of that stuff. I mean, you just don't know about that stuff in high school and college very much because a lot of times when you're just the greatest athlete, you don't need to. You can just sort of run past people like he did in college.
It was also a slightly different era in NFL coverage even. We forget about how different everything is covered now.
No tweeter
The analysis on work ethic has become – that's a last 10-year thing that it's become the champion. Oh, my God, we're going to talk about this every 2 seconds with every quarterback that known to man. And I was actually talking to a NFL backup a couple of years ago about how it's a running joke now in many locker rooms to be the last guy out as a quarterback. And he said, you'll walk into the quarterback room, and you've got two guys that are
just
sitting there, and they're playing games on their phone because they want to be the guy that's the last out. And it's like, I am going to outlast this guy with me. So that's how big of a conversation piece it's become in the last few years. So
I think it's a term we need to make it, not like an actual thing, so we can give those guys a chance to go home.
Yeah, go home.
It just needs to be
just
like
go home.
It's a way of life. You're right. The first in, last out. It doesn't mean you literally have to be the first in and last out.
No, you have to literally live
okay.
that life.
All right.
Yeah, we can.
So you could just play Clash of Clans on your phone. Does anybody still do that? I don't know. Clash of Clans on your phone in the quarterback room until the other guy breaks. Is that all it is?
That's apparently what
Rochambeau until the other guy has to go home.
Until Stockholm syndrome sets in.
So jeez. All of this to say,
good Lord,
all
Terry
Rubisky
is an awful offensive coordinator if that's the case. Right.
So all of this to say, we come in with no negative preconceptions on Vince Young, and frankly, the fact that he spent $15,000 at a Cheesecake Factory, good on him. I don't care if somebody blows their money. That's a them thing. That's
well, you have the right
personal
to do that.
Issue. I know many musicians over the years that have found themselves rich and then broke. So I'm not here to judge anybody in that process.
Wouldn't Allen Iverson buy entire wardrobes of clothing in every new city he went to and then just leave it in the hotel room?
I mean, Rob Gronkowski just went to Foxwoods up in Connecticut and spent $107,000.
On what?
A bar tab.
Yeah, bar tab.
That's
a bar?
Oh,
Foxwoods is a casino up there.
Yeah, but it's a bar, though. Like, there's also, of course, a bunch of clubs. He was at the club.
But you know what? Rob Gronkowski saves a lot of money in clothing bills.
It doesn't matter.
Like, he does not wear
any.
It's
a lot of money.
He doesn't wear any. He wears no clothing.
Factory pales in comparison.
All of that to say.
Zero money on shirts.
All of that to say, I have no negative preconceptions on how Vince Young has spent his money or Vince Young coming into the league. My problem with Vince Young after reading the article was not just Vince, and not even just Fisher, but to have quotes from Norm Chow, to have multiple sources outside of this that have come out in the last 24 hours and said, look, the guy just he never bought in. He never bought into right. what it's like to be a pro. And that's the difference, the one of the many differences. But that's a major difference between the quarterback situation now and the quarterback situation before.
And people are already asking us that on Twitter, like, well, what the Titans didn't support him, that Fisher and the coaching staff didn't like him or want him, which we know is true. And if the team had surrounded him with talent like they're doing for Mariota, it would have been different. And what's the difference between Mariota's situation and Vince Young's situation? And you heard Greg just say it. Mariota is one of the most humble, hardworking, sort of quiet leaders that we have in the game today. He is a wildly different personality than Vince Young. They have very similar skill sets. In fact, it's sort of eerie how similar their skill sets are when you look at their size and build, and their college tape probably looks very similar, the two of them. They ran basically the same offense with the same style of plays and everything. Similar skill set, everything. A completely different personality. A totally different mindset. And that is, as you can argue the Jeff Fisher angle, and I get what that angle is, and I understand that that's a part of this equation. But you cannot tell me that the biggest part of the equation is not, what do you want to be in your life? And that's what Marcus Mariota knows unequivocally and what Vince Young had no idea about. That is the biggest difference. John Robinson didn't draft Marcus Mariota. Like, he was surrounded by bad, right? When Marcus Mariota got to this team, he was surrounded by a bad GM and a coach that nobody liked, right? That was right up the same alley as Jeff Fisher. Everybody hates the guy. Nobody likes being around him. Bad for this, bad for that. Well, he's fired. The GM's fired. The coaching staff has changed. They draft some talent. But the thing that's really different about these two situations is the quarterback's temperament and maturity level, both of those things. But the temperament is different. Mariota is just wired differently than most human beings. He's just a rare bird. He's a rare commodity.
There are certain guys that Tom Brady wired different than most human beings. Aaron Rodgers, who sat behind Brett Favre, didn't become what so many people would in that situation. He worked his butt off. He got his opportunity. He crushed his opportunity. There are certain Drew Brees.
Oh, my God.
You could make a million arguments
about
Drew Brees. That
chip is still on Drew Brees' shoulder now.
And then you think about, speaking of the shoulder, the fact that he really wanted to go to the Dolphins, and the Dolphins wouldn't sign him because of his shoulder. And what does he do?
Oh, my God. Let's just think about Nick Saban. Had he signed Drew Brees, he would not be in the SEC, and we'd have a better SEC.
I mean,
let's think about that.
Dream world. You start to look at it. The reason the reason Derek Carr just got a huge contract is because within the building, they love him. That's the big difference between so many of these young quarterbacks that come in. It was already going to be difficult for Vince Young because Jeff Fisher, according to the article and according to everything we can find, didn't love him from the get-go. But he definitely didn't ingratiate himself.
He could have won Jeff Fisher over.
Right.
And it doesn't take much to win over a football coach.
Frankly, he went to Philadelphia after he was here. He didn't win them over either.
Packers,
and that's the year
Browns.
We just forget about the fact that he was a starter in Philadelphia and just didn't win them over. I mean, that's a big part of the process. Jerome, hanging on, man. What do you got?
Hey, good morning, guys. I was going to just say that I hate to go here, but Vince Young did not have the supporting cast around him like the way Mariota did. Didn't have his father. His family depended on him a lot. And when you come into a situation where luckily he has the God-given abilities and talent to overcome that, but if you don't have the basic tools and foundation of whether it be upbringing or the maturity tools to handle those life situations, especially when your head coach ditched you like Jeff Fisher did, it's hard to overcome. And I mean, not to use that as an excuse, but he didn't have it. That's why he had the maturity. That's why he had the humbleness that maybe Mariota had. Things came easy for him through his gifts, but he wasn't given the tools to have a business, the tools to be able to relate to the coaches. They probably gave him a pass. So when you've been given a pass your whole life on your gifts and not given the tools, you're going to make bad and immature decisions that he made.
Jerome, thanks for the call.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up Jerome, because in the article, when he was talking about his relationship with Fisher, he was saying, I got that father figure with Mac Brown at Texas. And I was unhappy, and it was unfortunate I never got that with Jeff Fisher. So that is a good point to bring up.
But it's also interesting because Mac Brown is guilty of the coddling and the entitlement.
That's the story around Mac Brown, a guy whose father abandoned him, he was raised by his mother, have someone once he got to college.
Mac is a great guy.
Whether he coddled him or not, Vince Young needed someone in his life to help him out. And maybe in NFL he expected that to happen. That's just not how things work out in the NFL, because you have to be a professional. And unfortunately for Vince, his background probably played a role in the fact that he was unable to mesh well.
And I would argue, digging too deep into the article, there's a point in the article where he's asked a question or he's made fun of in the quarterback room, and he responds, I'm the only guy here with the owner's phone number in my phone. I would argue that Bud Adams probably was part of that coddling and probably was, in that sense, trying to be a father figure, and it became a bad situation.
Yeah. And the narrative, I mean, the number one big headline around Mac Brown's tenure at the end of his tenure at Texas in the 08, 09, 2010, 11 years was that the sense of entitlement around the entire program had just overrun the program. Nobody wanted to work hard. Nobody cared about the right things. And I'm not saying they're bad. They're not bad people. It's just there's an element of grinding it out that Nick Saban has at Alabama, that Ohio State has with Urban Meyer, that Mac Brown totally just let fly. So Mac Brown's a great guy. And I'm so happy to see him take a role like that with Vince Young. But sometimes tough love is what you need to grow up. And that didn't happen with Mac Brown.
We'll continue the conversation throughout the day, but Mark Long going to join us up next. Mark Long is the Jacksonville AP writer. We've been trying to get you caught up on the rest of the SEC and the rest of the AFC South. We'll get caught up on Jacksonville. Do these free agent signings really mean anything? We'll get the scoop from somebody that's in the middle of it. Mark Long going to join us up next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.